In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit. Amen. I wanted to begin this morning by revisiting the epistle reading. St. Paul writes the following in this morning's epistle reading. Brethren, we are God's fellow workers. You are God's field, God's building. According to the grace of God given to me, like a skilled master builder, I laid a foundation and another man is building upon it. Let each man take care how he builds upon it, for no other foundation can anyone lay than that which is laid, which is Jesus Christ. Now if anyone builds on the foundation with gold, silver, precious stones, wood, hay, straw, each man's work will become manifest, for the day will disclose it, because it will be revealed with fire, and the fire will test what sort of work each one has done. That is where we find ourselves today in the 21st century, 21 centuries into the history of Christianity. We find ourselves building on a foundation as each generation has built before us. And of course, we build on the foundation of salvation, Jesus Christ our Lord. Now this sermon, in a way, is building on a foundation as well, because we began to lay the foundation at the beginning of the month when we introduced the theme of reaching out to people and inviting them to church. And as I mentioned in the previous sermons, this is prompted by a conversation I had with a woman who, with her husband, is starting a church here in San Francisco and has been doing very well. And when I asked her, how are you doing so well, she goes, well, we ask our members to identify persons that they know need Christ, that they think should be part of our church, and we've asked them to pray for them by name and then invite them to church. And it works. They've outgrown their first space. They're finding a second worship space. And I said, you know, that sounds like it makes a lot of sense to me. We should give that a whirl as well. And we talked last week about using our small groups ministry as a way of introducing people into the church. Faith and Fellowship begins Tuesday evenings. First meeting is Tuesday, the 17th of September. And we said last week that this is a low-pressure way, if you will, of introducing somebody into the church. And it is a way of inviting them to get to know other members of our congregation. Obviously, it is a way to invite them to learn more about the Lord. And this year in Faith and Fellowship, we'll be studying the Gospel according to St. Matthew, which is a wonderful way to have an overview or introduction into Christianity. And I know that inviting people to church can seem a little bit daunting, but I think this morning's Gospel reading should give us some encouragement. Remember, Peter was able to walk on the water as long as he kept his eyes fixed on Jesus. And then when he got a little bit scared and self-aware and filled with a little bit of doubt and fear, well, that's when he began to sink. And so for us to be able to invite people to church, and remember, we are inviting people to church not so that we can have more than 150 people in church on a Sunday or something like that. We're inviting people to church because we know that Christ is saving us and we want other people to experience that. But if we're going to invite people to church, then we need to keep our eyes fixed on Jesus. And we have mentioned in the past couple of weeks that we've prepared even cards for you to carry with you. One is a generic invitation to church, and one is just an invitation to our faith and fellowship. And as we have done the past couple of weeks, we'll have them as you walk out of the church so that you can pick some up and take them with you. And even though we've talked about inviting and we've talked about faith and fellowship, then we need to really ask ourselves, what is it that people think of when they think of the Orthodox Church? They really don't think of small groups, although our small groups are changing our congregation, but they think of the Divine Liturgy. They think of the Divine Liturgy. This is the central act of our church, is to gather, and on Sunday mornings, especially on the Lord's Day, not simply to be together in prayer, not simply to sing together, but to partake of the Eucharist. That's why we're here, to partake of the Eucharist. That's why we came. And it is reasonable to assume that sooner or later, whether it's the first time or maybe after being in small groups for a while, someone is going to come to Sunday Divine Liturgy here. They will have responded to our invitation. And it's worth us asking ourselves, what will people encounter when they respond to our invitation? What is it that Sunday mornings can and should provide for somebody new to the church, perhaps somebody new to Christianity? Well, first is my responsibility, and I think that clear, usable, prepared preaching and teaching are essential. And churches that lack clear, prepared preaching and teaching typically don't do very well. And that is because people come to church on Sunday mornings to hear something they can use for the rest of the week. I completely get that. And so that's my responsibility, and God grant I'll always be able to fulfill that responsibility on one level or another. But they come here to liturgy. They come here to this beautiful divine liturgy that we celebrate, and the churches everywhere around the world celebrate together every Sunday. And as we consider the power of divine liturgy, it's good for us to revisit an episode from church history. It has to do with the conversion of the Rus, the modern-day Russians. And here, there are various accounts. Here is the account by somebody named Dan Graves from the Christian History Institute. But it's consistent with things that I've read elsewhere. However, Prince Vladimir began to recognize that pagan gods are unable to unify Rus. Becoming interested in the question of faith while planning a campaign against the Eastern Roman Empire, he sent embassies to the neighboring states of Bulgaria, Khazar, and Byzantium to examine their beliefs. The ambassadors returned, declaring that the Islam of Bulgaria is too unhappy a religion to adopt. The fact that Islam bans fermented drink and pork does not set well with the Russians, who cannot imagine life without either, especially the drink. I didn't write that, Russians. Vladimir himself rejects the Judaism of his Khazar neighbors, for he says the Jewish loss of Jerusalem and its temple proves that God has forsaken them. Vladimir, not a theologian. As for German Catholicism, the ambassadors describe it as plain and dour. Their impression of the faith of their Orthodox neighbors to the south is altogether different. However, upon attending a service at the glorious Hagia Sophia Cathedral in Constantinople, they report, "And we went into the Greek lands, and we were led to a place where they served their God." And here's a line we've heard before. "And we did not know where we were, on heaven or on earth. And do not know how to tell about this. All we know is that God lives there with people, and their service is better than in any other country. We cannot forget that beauty, since each person, if he eats something sweet, will not take something bitter afterwards, so we cannot remain anymore in paganism." And God grant this is the feeling that people have when they visit here in this church. That was the effect of the ambassadors that Vladimir sent out, and of course we know the legacy of Orthodox Christianity in Russia because of that. But what is it that you and I can do to make sure that when people visit this beautiful space, when they hear our choir, who have been very attentive to prepare for liturgy, when they are around us, what can we do to make sure that we do everything possible not to stand in the way of that feeling? That feeling, we did not know where we were on heaven, in heaven or on earth. First, is something very simple, is we need to welcome people. Someone asked me if Holy Trinity has a welcome committee. This was somebody from another church. I said, no. Everybody in the church is pretty much a welcoming committee. If you go downstairs after coffee hour, you're going to be, if you're not a familiar face, you're going to be mobbed. And that person, that's true, right? And that's absolutely true. I had somebody criticize me for that. Every church needs a welcoming committee. I guess we do. I don't know, though. But everybody is pretty much a welcoming committee here. But part of that also is when we meet people is to try to introduce them to folks that seem like they might have something in common. So we have a lot of young adults typically on Sundays. If a young adult comes to church, you might want to, even during liturgy, have them sit by a young adult or certainly introduce them to young adults afterwards. And you get the picture, a young married couple, whatever it is. You would introduce them to people who might seem to be like them. And that's also part of welcoming. Although there's a lot of cross-generational connection here in this parish, and we obviously have people who are in their so-called third age of life, as the French would say, who are godparents to people who are younger than their old children. Part of the beauty of this space, and it is a beautiful space, is being attentive to maintaining the beauty. And that means the cleanliness of the church. Bo and Father Vasilios, I vacuumed the carpet this morning because we forgot to vacuum it apparently after Thursday's liturgy. And I said, this is perfect for my sermon, but that's right. When people walk in, imagine somebody now who had visited here for the first time this morning, they walk in a center aisle and there's breadcrumbs. And they could, you know, conclude one of two things. Either we don't clean up our church or we've lost our way and we've left breadcrumbs to find our way out. We have a lot of glass back there. Glass that covers the icons, glass that covers those glass doors. People venerate the icons. Little children press on the glass with their hands, and they're pretty much at little children's level. Adults press on their glass with their hands, and I really don't know why. We have handles on the doors. But all it requires to fix that is to grab Windex that we always keep in back and clean off the doors. And so any one of us, if you're walking past a door or an icon and it has schmutz on it, schmutz is not a Greek word, clean it, it's cool. That's the impression people get. If they walk in to our church and they see handprints on the doors, they're going to say, I didn't know whether you're in heaven or earth or in a preschool. But then there's the real important beauty, attention to the beauty of our souls. We've shared before in sermons that modern scholarship postulates that one of the reasons Christianity grew so quickly in the early years is because of the unique moral difference of Christians. We stood out from the rest of society. That was attractive to people. People knew that they needed something different because the status quo of society was quite frankly perverted. And so we need to pay attention to the quality of our souls, of our moral witness. People are watching. And we need to be attentive as to the way we worship. I want to give a shout out to the choir because we've talked a good bit about making liturgy more accessible musically. Why? Because people want to come and sing along and follow. And that's right now, the way that the choir is singing, anybody who has a reasonable command of the English language and wants to sing along in English is able to do that if they come to liturgy a couple times. And I hope more and more people are singing. And so thank you, choir. This dovetails with a survey that was done recently in the metropolis, a survey conducted throughout the various churches of priests and church musicians. The response rate was extremely high, which means that the data are not random data that have no meaning. They're very substantial. And four out of five churches see music becoming simpler and more easy to sing. That's what the trend that they see, and that's what they're looking for. We're on that trend right now, and so thank you, choir, because it matters. It matters when people come in here. And our choir recognizes, just as all choirs should recognize, that they're not singing for their own satisfaction or pleasure. They're singing because the way they sing and what they sing affects our salvation, and it affects the people who might be visiting here for the first time. Our participation is a witness to people who come. It's part of the beauty of this space. And if we're zoned off, or if we're on the phone checking scores from the East Coast, or talking to somebody, that's one thing. If we're praying, if we're singing along, if we recite the Creed and the Lord's Prayer together, that's a whole other subject. And yes, there is our arrival. I know that's a sore subject for us, and I don't expect to change this in my lifetime. But every time a visitor comes to church, they get to recognize or get to witness firsthand the miracle of the multiplication of parishioners or worshipers. And so, yes, we will start liturgy with about 5 people and conclude liturgy today with just under 150 people. And that takes place over an hour and a half period of time in a way that God himself probably only understands. But for people who don't know what we're like culturally, you know, think about that. They come to church and they see everybody coming in kind of when they want to, and they wonder, what's up with this place? That's like the people version of Handprints on the Glass. So one of the reasons to arrive on time is for the witness that we give to other people. Well, this sermon is built, as I mentioned, on the past 2 weeks, what we've been talking about, praying for people and then inviting them to the church. And we've laid a foundation over the past couple of weeks with talking about how and why we invite people, talking about faith and fellowship, and then today talking about divine liturgy. And I would expect we would return to divine liturgy one more time next week. And we're building on the foundation in this way so that we can be equipped, so that we can then go out and build on the foundation ourselves as we live out our faith and as we invite people to church. And we invite people to be part of this community. We invite people to come here on Sunday mornings, because every time you and I are gathered here, we're building upon the teaching and the work and the sacrifice of the generations who have come before us. Sometimes we think about generations in the near term, the generations since 1904. That's important. Sometimes we think about it in the abstract. Oh yeah, you mean St. Paul and St. Peter and the apostles. True. But there have been generations of every group of people, every place in the world, every culture, generations of Christian, one after another, who have built on the work before them. Small churches, big churches, country churches, city churches, Greek churches, Romanian churches, Russian churches, on and on it goes. They've left a legacy to us, to you and to me. And we inherit that legacy not because we don't want it to somehow fade away. We must hang on to it and preserve it. As I've mentioned before, we're not museum curators. We inherit that legacy so that we can go forward and share it with other people. Not simply the generation of children whom we might be raising or influencing, but the people out in the world right now who need Jesus Christ. We inherit the legacy of those who have come before us, who have built on the foundation that was laid for them. And it is incumbent upon us to do something with us. Because as St. Paul reminds us this morning, the generations before us have been building on a very important foundation. It is the most stable, most impervious, most life-changing, absolutely eternal foundation that could ever be laid. As St. Paul tells us, that foundation is Jesus Christ.